We're continuing our study in following the footsteps of Jesus to the cross. And I want to admit to you this morning as we start this study in the Gethsemane, we introduced it last week, that I find myself at a loss for words in some areas. I really do believe that Gethsemane is a subject for many of us that we may not have fully studied. The intensity, the suffering of Jesus at Gethsemane. I want to read the passage and then I want us to talk about it. I realize we read this last week, but I felt like we were kind of rushing a little bit toward the end of the class last week. Matthew 26, beginning in verse 36. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, "Sit here while I go and pray over there." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. And he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me." He went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "Oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." Then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, a second time, he went away and prayed, saying, "My Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done." And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. So he left them, went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then he came to his disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." As you look in this verse, we're familiar with it, having read it over the years, but there's an intensity, a suffering, in Gethsemane that maybe we do not always see. It's interesting, as Jesus described the degree of sorrow he had, the Bible says he was sorrowful and deeply distressed, and he went on to say, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death." And we talked about last week about how the very position of Jesus in the Gethsemane was remarkable because he fell on his face. And I really believe that's what that means. That when he started the prayer, that he was on his face praying. It was a position of extreme humility, subjection. Last week, and I'll go to the part of the PowerPoint we're at last week, we were looking at Hebrews 5 and verses 7 through 9. You know, the Bible talks about how he was sated with sorrow. He was overwhelmed with sorrow. And let's get to the Hebrews 5. Here we go. Hebrews 5, 7 through 9, I believe, has reference to Gethsemane. Again, keep in mind, this is the Son of God. This is Jesus. And Jesus at Gethsemane is preparing for a battle that we talked about last week, a battle that the disciples had not a clue about. But Hebrews 5, 7 through 9, listen to this. "Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and was heard because of his godly fear. Though he were a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him." You know, sometimes when it comes to prayer, you would think, well, all Jesus needed to do was to pray and say, "God, is this your will?" "Yes, it's my will." And then be satisfied with that. Why all the emotion? Why the repetition? Why was Gethsemane as intense as it was? My answer would be, Jesus had to prepare himself for this event. And I think you know what I'm talking about. You know, we gave football illustrations last week, but sports illustrations are a good one. My son runs races, and I'll never forget, I've run a few marathons. And it's quite interesting, there is not only a physical preparation, but there's a psychological preparation to an event. You can see that in sporting events, but this is much more serious than any sporting event. How do you prepare for the cross? How do you mentally prepare and have your mind ready to work through all the things that Jesus was going to face? I believe that's what was happening here. The intense suffering of Jesus in Gethsemane cannot be emphasized enough. We've already pointed out how Jesus' attitude in this was a wonderful attitude and the repetition of the prayer. It says again, a second time he went away and prayed, saying, "O Father, if this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, your will be done." But it's quite interesting here, between the first and second prayer and Luke's account, there's some things that we just kind of read over and don't think much about it. But again, the intensity of Jesus' prayer. Notice what happened here between the first and second prayer. Then an angel appeared to him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. Then his sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground. You know, we suggested in the study of Jesus in prayer that there's a lot of things we don't know. That his prayer life really caused his disciples to say, "Lord, teach us to pray." And now here we get into Gethsemane. Prayer was not just, "Hey, what should we do? What do I need to do? Okay, I'll go do it." There's something else going on here. There is an intensity from Jesus' standpoint where I really believe the battle of the cross is fought at Gethsemane. That when Jesus leaves Gethsemane, he is prepared to face whatever Satan throws at him. And his disciples just had not a clue what was going on and not a clue of their own needs. You know, Jesus is saying, "Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation." Here Jesus is doing what it takes to prepare for the cross. But do you see how that comes back to us? Do we ever pray that way? Is there a time in prayer where there is intense emotion and struggle and there is the desire to help to prepare us for the battles that fall ahead? What does it mean when it says the sweat became like great drops of blood falling to the ground? I used to think that, well, that's just, you know, an illustration that he had large drops of sweat. I've come to the conclusion now that he probably had blood intermingled with his sweat because of the intensity of it. I just know one thing, that an angel strengthening him. How about in your example of life of Christ? When's the last time that happened? When was the last time angels needed to come to minister to Jesus? Class? What's that?
40 days and 40 nights.
Right, 40 days and 40 nights fasting in the wilderness. Ever done that? You know, I could understand needing some help after that and facing Satan. Jesus needed help from the angels in Gethsemane. Again, I lack words. I'm just going to tell you. I lack words to fully explain this. But I see here a level of prayer and a power of prayer that helped Jesus face the cross. Again, I wish I could tell you more. I wish I could give you a lot more words of wisdom, except look at this. Christian, one thing's for sure. If we would pray like this, if we would have the wisdom to see the dangers ahead and have the wisdom to see how much help we need, Jesus, the Son of God, needed to pray. He needed to pray to this level to face what was ahead. Yes?
God gave us his
There's always the possibility of that being an element. But remember, in John 17:5, he's looking forward to go home. He's going, I want to be with you. John 17:5, 1 through 5, I want to have the glory which we had before the world began. So he could remember. I mean, listen, but keep in mind, he came from heaven to earth. Remember, we gave the illustration just like man becoming an earthworm. Well, you're about to die as an earthworm. Go back to be a man. Yeah, I'm ready for that. So, I mean, there's a sense there where I don't think there's anything in this world he didn't mind leaving, except his disciples. Of course, he still would be with them, you know, in his fellowship as he went into heaven. I really believe he was going to go through the fire. It's very much like in this life where we're about to face a terrible event and we're going to go through the fire. Wow. Am I going to quit? Am I going to call those legion of angels that I could by lifting my little finger this much and hitting back at those people that are lying about me and that are laughing at me and slapping me and say, prophesy to us. Who struck you? To me, to have the strength never to hit back is probably the thing that he needed here. And you're right, there's the divine aspect of Jesus and the human aspect of Jesus. He's fully human, fully divine. And there's that sense where, yeah, there were going to be temptations. He couldn't slip once. Guess what if he slipped up? What does that do for us? It's all done. It's all gone. So again, it seems to me from that standpoint that he's going through the fire and he needed strength. Okay? And so again, I don't understand how the angel strengthened him. And I know that back when he was tempted in the wilderness, we see the intensity of the agony. And now Jesus prays the third time and he's ready. Ever been ready for some? Maybe a test. I don't know how many students we've got here, but you know what it's like when you go through the finals, and have you ever studied and worked and you're ready for the final? You know, that's not a great illustration, but he's now ready. Jesus leaves Gethsemane ready to face the cross. If there was no Gethsemane, I'm convinced there would be no cross. And so as we talk about following the footsteps of Jesus, we need to understand that level of preparation. Remember, we read this earlier, and this is Mark's account, Mark 14:41. Then he came a third time and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going, see my betrayers at hand. Brethren, if we want to follow the footsteps of Jesus, we cannot have an easy path. It's not a Sunday stroll with Jesus. It's not showing up here and getting our name on the roll and learning a little bit and just living as we want to. The battle of faith is a battle. And there may be a period of time where there's relative peace, but I guarantee you, for every one of us, we have battles that lie ahead and battles that we need to look at the example of Jesus and prepare ourselves. The disciples did not know at this time that their need. Now let's talk about another aspect of preparation. The enemies. Did the enemies prepare? You just tell me. What did the enemies of Christ do before this event? Did they just happen to, some soldiers were just strolling through the dark. Oh, look, there's Jesus. Let's arrest him. Is that how they go? What preparation did the enemies of Jesus make? What did they do? Yeah. Now, how do they know how to get Jesus? But how do they know he's going to be there? Do they have any good intelligence? They had Jesus. Had him paid off. They figured Jesus would be there for the feast. This would be the time to get him. You're going to get him, but you got to get him at a time where the people don't see him. They plan. Very capable planning. Was their planning perfect? I mean, got a job done, didn't they? They got Jesus arrested and they killed him. Is there anything they left out of their planning? Well, notice how the Bible puts it. If the princes of the world had to do it over again,
They wouldn't, though.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. Look at this. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 7. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew, for had they known, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. Why wouldn't they have done that? They were killing the Son of God. God wanted this to happen. This was by God's plan. So there's one thing that we need to understand about planning and preparation and effort. If you're fighting God's plan, then you're going to lose. God's wisdom is so far above anything we could have. He could take the most stringent opponent wanting to destroy the work of God, and God could use him like a little old dog on a leash. And here you go. Now, God didn't make them do evil, but He'll take evil men and their determination and use them. And that's what happened here. So they prepared, but they were on the wrong side of the coin. They're fighting God and not trying to serve God. So really, ultimately, the only person that was prepared when the cross came was Jesus. We talked about last week the disciples were unprepared. We talked about that this week. The enemies were unprepared. And so I think there's a lesson that we would draw out of Gethsemane. And so we talked about how, you know, they had an attachment of troops. They knew that they needed to seize Jesus. The temple guards were ready for their duty. Roman guards had security. They had staged to put down any crowd. They had false witnesses gathered. And they had an innocent way to reveal the identity of Jesus through Judas. Of course, we pointed out again, they were fighting God. And that's an interesting point and it's funny here. In this case, this is Gamaliel advising the Sanhedrin. In verse 39, he says, "But if it is of God, you cannot overthrow it, lest you even be found to fight God." But in this passage, even with the great advice of Gamaliel, Gamaliel's fighting God and the Sanhedrin's fighting God. I mean, you can say you shouldn't fight God, but you can end up fighting God. And that's what happened with Pilate and the rest. They ended up being pitted against God's way. Okay, let's do some discussion if we could, and we'll make that brief, and then we want to continue on with the cross. Okay, let's talk about a few things. We talked about this last week, but I'll ask this to you, Christian. Why does it mean for every Christian to bear a cross? You don't bear a cross, you can't be a disciple. That's what discipleship is, to bear a cross. What does that mean? Is that our jewelry? Right. What we wear? Bear a cross. Do we have any disciples in the room? You know, here is what you've got to do. You've got to bear a cross. Adam, why did they bear a cross?
A certain amount of pain and suffering. Not to the extent of Jesus, but trials, temptations.
So that would happen just every now and then, right? Daily?
Okay.
I think that bearing the cross, some of the fruits will be at times pain and suffering. It's a little broader. I think it involves that. Yes?
Thinking when I think of the cross, I think of sacrifice. We sacrifice our will to God's, and we sacrifice anything to stand between us and God.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's right. And then it leads to the other. And that's right. So it's basically, folks, if you're a Christian, you die. If you're a Christian, your will is crucified. That's the point over and over again, I think, Galatians 2:20, where Paul talks about, "It's not I, but Christ that lives in me." Galatians 6:14, "He glories in the cross." The idea, Romans 8 talks about we've got to crucify the flesh. It's a battle. Every day we've got to carry our cross. Daily. And again, remember, we talked about the cross as being a sign of ultimate change. So again, Christian life is a wonderful life. It's full of meaning. But every day we bear the cross. Yes, it is. Yeah. It's when we because we're following Jesus, we pay a price. Can I give an example of parents? We have those that have children, some grown children, some children on the way. You pay some price for that, don't you? Have some sleepless nights. Then I can still we're still going to experience it. Our kids start driving. You know, you go through a lot of struggle, but you do that willingly because in this case we're talking about wanting to provide the best for your children and help them. It costs you, but there's a joy in it. You know what you're doing. And the same thing is true with Jesus. We bear the cross knowing the joy because we know we're going. You don't take the easy way. You don't take the easy way. You bear the cross. Was there no other way for Jesus? Why was there no other way for Jesus to redeem mankind? If it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Let's go to plan B. What's plan B?
God is just. He has to have a perfect sacrifice. There was no other way for God to satisfy His love for us, and yet still be just. That's correct.
There's no other way. Now, folks, we're right with God is because of the blood of Christ. If we're right with God, it's because He was willing to go through the fire for us. Just like a parent, as parents, for our children. If our children were in trouble, we'd go to the fire for them, wouldn't we? We'd go to the fire and give our life if necessary to save our children. And I think as a parent, you know, what better example I could follow than that of Jesus, who went to the cross to provide me one. And that's why. Next question. What great mistake did Peter and the disciples make before the cross? We could talk about mistakes. But let's talk about that. Why was Peter unprepared? Peter was zealous. And Peter was willing to give his life for Jesus. Now, don't mistake me. He was willing to leave. But what mistake did he make? Is zeal enough? Is being zealous? I'm going to put all my energy into something. Okay, you're ready. Are you ready when you're zealous? I mean, you thought about sports. Have you ever seen a disciplined team prepared versus a team with great athletes with a lot of zeal? You know, they come out in a new colored uniform and they go out there with a lot of energy and they get flattened. What was the problem with the disciples in their preparation? They overestimated their own faith. What else did you say?
Underestimated the strength of the enemy.
Yes, they underestimated the strength of the enemy. He was ready to fight the wrong battle. That's a big mistake. Ready to fight the wrong battle. He would not listen. And you know, that's our day. Brethren, whoever we are, we don't know what lies ahead. We don't know what might happen in our life. We know a God who loves us, and who will be with us and help us. But if you go through your Christian life casually on the bed of ease,
I guarantee you, you will not be prepared for when the battle hits you. And so those are some things I see for myself. We need to understand. Did God answer Jesus' prayer at Gethsemane?
Yes.
The Hebrews 5 says He did. What was His prayer? Did He pray, Lord, I want to not go to the cross? Is that what He prayed? He prayed for His will to be done. He prayed, well, I would like this if it's possible, but nevertheless, Thy will be done. Remember that in your prayers. If you're kind of going to God as a servant boy and say, hey, I got some jobs I want you to do, you might as well forget praying. You don't know God. But what you need to do is pray to God and say, Lord, I would really like this to happen, but let Your will be done. Because you know why was God's will done? Because Jesus suffered? Because it helped, it not only provided salvation, but it gave an example for others to see how much God loves us. I'll say it again. God oftentimes will want us to suffer. Want us to go through difficult circumstances. We're brought to our knees and we make it through faithfully with the attitude of a Christian. I'm going to tell you something. That not only helps us, but it helps others. So you need to think about that next time things start happening. You may say, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, God will let things happen to you. He'll control that and He'll always do it for His glory. But you got to be prepared. Why did Jesus suffer such agony in the garden? Did He suffer more at the cross or in the garden? Now, I won't tell you. We can't answer the second question. That's an opinion. But let's just ask, why did He suffer so much in the garden? Why was the prayer so difficult? Sweats, drops of blood. Angels helped Him. He was saved with agony. Even unto death. What's that?
He was human.
But why did that create such struggle?
Some of it could be the injustice of what he was about to experience. He didn't deserve it, and he was the creator of all of this, and he was going to go through all this at the hands of his creation.
Yeah. He had to be prepared to react and to be completely humble to God's will. He had to have any temptation toward pride, any temptation for revenge, any temptation for any false motive. He had to be prepared that that would not come in. And I'll tell you why, and we'll get there in just a minute. If you don't prepare ahead of time for something, you're sitting duck, aren't you? And that's the interesting thing. If you don't have time to mentally prepare and have the ways, you're just sitting duck. And so that to me is why he suffered so much. Yes.
I think we have to revisit Peter. Peter was, I don't know if it's accurate to say he was prepared to die. He was prepared, as any swordsman would be, to fight.
Yes.
And to possibly live. Most warriors go into it believing that they're going to win and survive, not that they're going to die. And Jesus was preparing to die, preparing to lose an earthly battle. And Peter was not preparing to lose an earthly battle. He was preparing to win an earthly battle.
Yes.
So it's very much different, the preparation that Peter was making all along the way to fight and the preparation Jesus was making all the way along to lose.
Excellent. Now, us guys, so I'll tell you what us guys can do. We get in the fight, can't we? If we could go face it and get our swords out and go fight it, whatever may come, we could do that. You know what's the hardest thing for us guys to deal with? Problem that is snow. Is that
drift.
And you can't beat it. Oh, I hate those. But guess what? Yeah. We're going to face those guys too. We can't always go out there. Let's just nip this thing in the bud, you know, like Barty Fife. So if something can't be just nipped in the bud, you got to have a strength over a long haul, like raising children, like other things along those lines. There is a real preparation
that is necessary. So it's quite interesting. Don't be a confident Christian. Be humble. I understand that there's a lot of things you don't know what's going to face in this life, but you know who holds the future. But you've got to let God help you. Other comments? I hope you'll rethink Gethsemane because of this study. What great mistake did the enemies of Christ make as well as their leader, Satan? What was Satan's big mistake? If Satan had taken this battle plan, I'm not going to let anybody kill Jesus. We'll just ridicule him. You know, God's plan. But think about it. God is wise enough. He could take his enemies and make them do whatever they want without compromising their will. And so, but they say, remember, you see the word mystery? Remember that word mystery used regarding the death of Jesus? 1 Corinthians 2:7-8, the word mystery. The word mystery is from the Greek word mysterion. It's like a battle plan. It's like a general gets into a battle and then he reveals his strategy. It was hidden, but now it's revealed. And so that's what's happening here. Jesus, God had a battle plan with Jesus. The enemies think, crucify him. Yes, sir, we win. God now will forgive me. Satan, in Hebrews 2:14-15, the Bible talks about how Jesus took on flesh and blood that he may destroy him. That is Satan, the one who has power of death, who kept men in bondage because of the fear of death. So they couldn't defeat God even though they tried. Now, let's go to the next section if we could, and I appreciate your discussion on this. I want to talk about some things about the cross if we could. There are some things we're not covering in this study. We're going to go on to the cross, but there's some things we need to be aware of what happened. Did you know that Jesus faced a whole series of trials? And they were all done from about midnight to, you know, 6 or 7 in the morning. I don't know if that was hours exactly right. And do you know by law no trials could be held at that time? By law, they could not have a trial and convict somebody of a capital offense and execute them in the same day. They violated, the Jews violated their laws left and right, left and right, left and right. It's interesting. One of the trials, let's say the trial before Pilate, what was the verdict? He was innocent, and so he's going to be executed. You know, there are things, as you look at this, it's just a mockery. Now, how many of these things were known by those on the cross? I don't know. The trials were a fiasco. You know, one of the interesting things when people are trying to slander you, people trying to misrepresent you, sometimes one of the best responses is silence. And you know what? Now, people that hate you, and they want to hurt you, they'll believe the evil speakers. But good, fair people start asking a few questions. And they can see. There were those trials fell to pieces. How many of the false witnesses and their testimony was used to convict Jesus? Even the enemies who hired the false testimony, when it came down to the charges against Jesus, how many of the false witnesses were responsible for Jesus' conviction? Big Pilate, the high priest had to step in and say, tell me who you are. Are you the Son of God? And you remember he said, I am. And he tore his clothes. He's blasphemed. And so he took him to Pilate and said he's guilty of blasphemy, right? After they convicted him of blasphemy in the Jewish court, they took him to Pilate and said he's guilty of blasphemy. Nope. They changed what he was convicted of and they said, oh, he's guilty of treason. I mean, you just see kangaroo court after kangaroo court after kangaroo court. And when you look at this, keep in mind that these men were the equivalent, I guess, of the Supreme Court of God's people. They should have represented the will of God more than any of those on the Sanhedrin. Notice what it said about them in John 18:28. They led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium, and it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled. And they may not eat the Passover. Did you understand what's being said here? Here are these men. They went through this whole trial. They lied. They hired men to tell lies. They lied to Pilate. The Gentile Pilate, the Bible says, he knew they handed Jesus over because of envy. But guess what? The high priest couldn't enter into Pilate's place. Why? They didn't want to be defiled. You see a blindness there. And Brad, we'd be that way if we're not careful. We can be like Pharisees. We can lie about somebody, we can gossip about somebody, and we can have a hard heart toward others, but we don't want discourse of. We need to be careful that we don't be like these people. Okay, we've already talked about this point. Now, as we go to the cross, you remember how Jesus had to carry his cross. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but Jesus was carrying the very item of his execution. But before Jesus had gone to the cross, remember, he had already been through scourging. He had already been through Gethsemane. Did the bell ring? Well, we had two men. Oh, okay. Well, we'll pick up next week. Thanks.
Thank you. Enjoy the club.